love you.
Hello, my name's Tom Walker. Welcome to That'll Be The Day. In this podcast, I'm talking to a visually impaired man who really is forging a fabulous career on stage and screen. But before we hear from Venetia Blind, who's a visually impaired drag queen, if you like the music at the start of this podcast, it's a track called That'll Be The Day by the Liverpool band The Vow. And as always, I'll be featuring a track by The Vow at the end of this podcast. To find out which one I've chosen, stay tuned. Now, Jake Sawyers from Cardiff is only 27, but he's already making quite a name for himself. By his own admission, Jake has always loved being the centre of attention. And when he goes on stage to do his drag queen act, the audience's eyes are very definitely drawn to him. But there's more to Jake than that. When I spoke to him the other day on Zoom, we started by talking about the reaction he's received to some recent publicity.
the response to the article has been so overwhelming. I've had so many messages the last week, and it's been really, really good.
Really? How many messages have you had, and what are people saying?
Oh, I've had a few people asking for makeup tips. I've had people asking me to appear on podcasts like this one. And yesterday I had the most exciting one. I was sent, I don't know much about it yet, so it's quite a new development, but I'm going to be sent my first box of free PR makeup something. So feeling very famous and very overwhelmed this week.
Brilliant. You started off, though, training to be an actor, didn't you?
I did, yes. I studied at the University of Wales, Trinity St David, which is a very long title, and that's in Carmarthen, which is West Wales. And I'm from Port Talbot, which is South Wales, so my university was about 40 minutes down the road, so far enough away to sort of get my independence, but close enough to, you know, go home and wash my towels and wash my clothes and things like that. So yeah, university was great. Graduated with an acting degree in 2016 and moved to Cardiff then with my partner, who I met a few years previously when we were studying in college, when we were both 16. And we both went to university together, and now we're both living in Cardiff together, and we're engaged. So we're both actors, drag queens, freelancers. So we're just sort of living that life where we just keep hustling and getting new opportunities, which is really exciting and keeps things, definitely keeps things fresh.
Well, as a freelancer, I understand the word hustling only only too well. What was university like for you? Did they make the adjustments that you needed as a visually impaired person?
Yeah, so I was really torn whether or not to go to university. I left secondary school, and my choices were either go to college and do all the sciences and history, or just do one big BTEC in acting. And I went for the BTEC in acting, met some lovely people, and a lot of us decided to go to the same university. So quite a rare experience, not the experience you often hear of university. You often hear people going very far away by themselves, but I went, you know, somewhere quite close with a lot of people I knew. So that was really comforting for me. And I had visited the university before, spoke to the lecturers, got my disability students allowance sorted. So for me, it was quite a smooth experience, but I know I'm sort of one of the lucky ones. So it was either university for me or go work in the Apple store. And I think I made the right decision. I still own every Apple product now, but not because I'm employed.
What adjustments did you need at university?
So my course, I was quite particular in the course that I chose. I wanted something really practical, and, you know, acting definitely ticks that box. So, you know, there wasn't a hell of a lot of reading. It was mostly practical things, which, you know, I'm fine with because I've been acting all my life. I've been sort of in that world. So it didn't take much adjustment for me. The adjustments that were made were all the lovely things I had to help me do my course. So I had my big printer, my screen, my iPad, my laptop. And then I did have some sort of admin support, which I sort of stopped using half a year in because I found that it was easier for me to adjust my own things and sort of just download ebooks and get the money reimbursed than have to go somewhere early in the morning to have somebody just photocopy it from A4 to A3.
Before we talk about your acting career, what was school like for you?
I had a great time in school. So I went to a mainstream school which had a visually impaired unit. So I had teachers, teaching assistants, QVTIs, sitting next to me in every lesson, which, you know, is a very unique experience when you're growing up, going through puberty, having somebody sit next to you for all of your lessons. But, you know, I managed it fine. I sort of found my friendship group a few years into secondary school. They were really nice, and we, you know, we still talk and things like that. So yeah, it was okay for me. It was as okay as school gets, I think. So I'm really lucky about that. And I had great support from my parents and the rest of my family and my friends and all of those QTV and the QVTIs. So yeah, I definitely, you know, always thank them down the line for sort of who I've turned out to be.
I had the great pleasure, or maybe not, of going to a residential special school, which was variable in the experience, I have to say. I've done quite a few stories on visually impaired people in mainstream, and some, like yourself, seem to have done quite well and been fine, but others just seem to be sort of sitting in the corner and not getting involved with any of the fun or the mischief that's taking place in the classroom. Were you able to get involved in all that sort of stuff?
I always find school a really funny one, because I think looking at it with hindsight, it was all fine, and I sort of took from it what I could. But I know at the time, you know, I did feel very isolated. I had a very small group of friends that I didn't find until a few years in. So yeah, I didn't really get involved in a lot of that sort of school stuff, all the mischief. And, you know, I've definitely got some horrendous stories of teachers just not preparing work or just totally, you know, discriminating against me. But I think because it's been so long, I've just sort of decided to take the good parts and just remember those, but then keep fighting then for, you know, other people to get those rights and things. So yeah, such a strange one when it comes to school.
When did the acting actually first start for you, Jake? When did you first think, actually, I rather like this?
So I've always been quite an attention seeker. So it's always been in me. But I'd say the point for me where it started was, I think I was in about year seven, so about 11, 12 years old. And this is such a diva story. Our school was putting on a High School Musical. I was in year seven. I thought, I'm going to audition for that. I'm going to get the main part and it's going to be amazing. Auditioned, got put in the chorus, which is fair enough because I was just an 11-year-old. And I decided then, no, I'm never going to act again. And I hate this. This is ridiculous. It's such a little diva. And then the visually impaired unit, the head QVTI said to me, oh, we've got a group coming in. They're called UCAN Productions. And they sort of do drama workshops for young blind children and young people. And you can bring a friend along as well if you want. So it's not just a blind exclusive thing. Sounded great. But at the time I was like, no, I'm at the ripe age of 11-year-old. I've retired from acting. I'm not doing it. So I missed the first few sessions. And then I was dragged along to one by force and sort of loved it from there. Ever since, I've been doing acting workshops with UCAN. Got for over 10 years now, and I actually work for them now as well as a workshop leader, as a visually impaired workshop leader. So it's that full circle moment of, you know, teaching the younger generation what I had when I was that age. So I think, you know, I've been doing that for so long, and that has definitely given me such a grounding in this sort of, you know, sector of being disabled and being an actor and advocating for your needs and all that lovely stuff.
You've mentioned there very honestly that you were an attention seeker.
Yes.
What other forms did that take? How else did you seek attention?
This is a good one. When I was the same age, 11, 12, myself and my brother were watching Blue Peter on BBC One, and they announced a competition called the Can You Cook It competition, and the prize was to win the opportunity to cook on Blue Peter every month, to do that classic, here's one I made earlier, presenting live. We both entered the competition, myself and my brother. I got an audition, he didn't. And then a long story short, I ended up winning the competition. So I won it against, I think, 12,000 kids in the UK, and it was all televised. And there were different rounds. We went to this big residential house and did all these crazy challenges. I think I had to milk a goat while talking about it. I had to talk about food on a roller coaster, and it all sort of ended with this dramatic final three in the Blue Peter studio where we'd make a, what did we make? a souffle. We made a souffle for James Martin and all the presenters. And then I ended up winning the competition. So at that age of 11, 12, I was going up to London every month to cook live on BBC One Blue Peter, which is crazy. And when I tell people that, it just blows their mind that I did that at that age. And, you know, it blows my mind as well, because I haven't done a lot of live TV since then. But I think, you know, being youthful, you just have that bravery.
How did they treat you as a visually impaired person? I mean, presumably they knew that you're visually impaired.
Yeah, so I think a very small group of people knew. I don't think the presenters knew. I think just a handful of producers knew, but I know it was, you know, it was mentioned in the final edit and things, but I remember it just being a really pleasant experience at the time. And I think that's what gave me the grounding to actually pursue this career, because, you know, I've definitely had more discrimination as an adult and more hardships. I think, you know, being a blind child for me was so much easier than being a blind adult. I'm sort of only now, you know, in the last 10 years, learning how hard that can be compared to my childhood, because I was so well supported. So I think that has its ups and downs, that, you know, I wasn't sort of, you know, my back wasn't turned to how hard it could be, but, you know, I definitely had a textbook experience of what it should be like for a blind child growing up.
That's really positive, isn't it? I mean, I know what you mean about the industry generally. I mean, the media is very similar in a lot of ways. And certainly I've developed quite a lot of resilience, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Resilience. I think for me, it's a cocktail of seeing the funny side of everything, just being, you know, generally humorous. And then also being from Port Albert, working class background. So I just, you know, I don't take any of it from anyone.
You've just got to speak up, haven't you?
Yeah, you do. And it's such a hard skill to master. And, you know, I say master, I haven't mastered it at all. It's, you know, it's a case by case situation on how you disclose your sight loss, how you advocate for your needs. And it is about speaking up, but God, that can be so exhausting sometimes. And I, you know, I teach a lot of self-advocacy workshops to young people, and, you know, I want to make sure that I don't just go in and say, right, you need to say this, 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 this. I want to, you know, it's everyone has their own way of, you know, their own relationship with their sight loss. So I think it's really important to